Temna zvezda. Oddaja o filmu in skritih straneh filmskega vesolja. Vsak prvi in tretji ponedeljek v mesecu ob 8:30 zvečer.
Drage poslušalke in poslušalci, prav lepo pozdravljeni v novi majski temni zvezdi, v kateri vam bomo zavrteli kar nekaj zanimivih posnetkov, pogovorov s filmskimi ustvarjalkami in ustvarjalci. Za začetek boste lahko prisluhnili pogovoru z ustvarjalci filma Karpopotnik, za katerega je Matjaž Ivaniši na letošnjem festivalu slovenskega filma prejel nagrado za najboljši scenarij. Če tudi smo na vaš najljubši radijski postaji o tem zares čudovitem filmu že spregovorili, smo po naših arhivih spričo novih uspehov, ki jih po svetu žanje ta edinstven portret Karpa Godine, poiskali posnetke pogovora Katje Čičikoj z ekipo na minulem 16. FSF-ju. Preden pa se bomo od vas poslovili, drago poslušalstvo, bomo prisluhnili še legendarni Ingrid Bergman, katere življenjska pot je bila močno zaznamovana sodelovanjem z velikim režiserjem Robertom Rossellinijem, čigar retrospektivo si lahko v teh dneh ogledate v slovenski kinoteki. Poleg Bergmanove boste lahko prisluhnili še posnetku Martina Scorseseja, ki je tudi sicer velik Rossellinijev občudovalec. Prisluhnimo sedaj pogovoru o filmu Karpopotnik, ki se je uvrstil v netekmovalno sekcijo Viewpoints Njujorškega filmskega festivala Tribeka. Glede na to, da je Karpopotnik zares nekaj posebnega, ni naključje, da so organizatorji Tribeke film umestili v sekcijo, ki se osredinja na promocijo svežih in izrazitih avtorskih glasov, ki preizkušajo meje filmskega medija. Karpopotnik je namreč prav to. Je edinstven poklon Karpu Godini, portret brez fizično vizualizirane podobe osrednjega portretiranca, ki nas skromno, kot je to v navadi za najboljše filme, spomni, zakaj imamo radi filme. Sicer pa se ideja za nastanek filma, kot Matjaž Ivaniši pove Maji Krancu intervju za revijo Kino, porodila v sklopu EPK-ja, znotraj katerega so pripravljali serijo portretov kulturnikov in umetnikov, povezanih z Mariborom. Na tej sledi je Ivanišina k sodelovanju povabil filmski producent Miha Črnec skupaj s studijem Legan. Ko je padla zelena luč z Godinove strani, je Ivanišin Maji Kranc tudi zaupal, da se je začel, da je začel razmišljati, zlasti pa preučevati materiale, ki mu je iz lastnega arhiva posodil Karpo Godina. Ob tem je Ivanišin odkril, da je bil za beograjsko televizijo v koprodukciji z RTV Slovenija že posnet klasični in tudi nagrajeni Karpo portret. Tako se je Ivanišin odločil, da se česa podobnega ne bo lotil. V tem iskanju, ki ga je okvirilo Godinova pravilo, da se on v filmu fizično ne sme pojaviti, je Matjaž Ivaniši naletel na film Imam eno hišo, ki velja za dokaj nepoznan, predvsem pa zgodnji Karpov film. In prav ta film, poleg omenjenega pravila, je postal nekakšno sidrišče Karpopotnika, pri čemer se je Ivanišin odločil, da bo poiskal ljudi, ki so nastopili v Karpovem filmu. In tako se je začelo vznemirljivo filmsko potovanje. Kako je torej potekal proces snemanja Karpopotnika, svojevrstnega filma Ceste, katerega zasnova sledi po potovanju mladega Karpa Godine pred več kot 30 leti po Vojvodini, kjer je nastal omenjeni film? Imam jedno kučo, ki pa je danes ohranjen le še v obliki posameznih podob. Predajmo torej besedo Matjažu Ivanišinu, režiserju in scenaristu filma, ki se mu v posnetku kasneje pridruži še Nebojša Pop Tasič, ki je za film prispeval tudi besedilo.
Popotovali, ne? Po teh vaseh smo pač istočasno snemali, ne? Tako da je bilo to bilo potrebno sprejemati ne zelo hitre odločitve, tako je Nebojša rekel, pač prišli smo, našli smo gospo, ki tam živi, katere hčerka je igrala v filmu, pela v filmu. In slučajno ona pride pravno tisto nedeljo za te dve uri in mi imamo toliko časa, da poskušamo ujeti jo na film in pač nekaj o njej povedati. Ne? In s tem, ko smo se morali omejiti samo na like, ki jih je tudi Karpo iz serije svojih likov, ki jih je posnel, se pravi, jih je izbral za nek close-up, za nek bližnji plan, ne? Smo se otresli na nek način vsega odvečnega, ne? Tako da smo v bistvu iskali samo njih in kaj se je izkazalo, da je vsak od teh ljudi po svoje ima neverjetno zgodbo. Ne? Ima neverjetno zgodbo. Tako da tudi, ko so ljudje pripovedovali o njih, mogoče ravno zato, ker smo jih presenetili, ker nismo jih prišli še enkrat, pa jih pol jim dali ta čas, da razmislijo in se pripravijo, so na nek način zelo, zelo spontano pripovedovali in seveda tudi pretiravali. Ne? Ti starci, ki so govorili o Ficku, so ga dejansko jemali v teh pripovedih kot enega, so njegovo življenje že tudi oni sami na nek način poetizirali. To, da je človek bil veterinar, oblekel svoj plašč veterinarski, šel v sosedno vas pregledovati ženske in se tam izdajal za veterinarja, to so pač starci v navdušeni pač, ne, pripovedovali. Ne. Nebojša je to seveda pol znal povedati na pravi način. Ne. Mi smo lahko eno alinejo, ne, si zapisali v beležko. Ne. Tako da gre za bistvo za dva tipa. En je ta, ki izhaja iz slike, kar je pač Nebojša direktno, samo v pogledu, kar je najbolj fascinantno pa dragoceno se mi zdi, samo v pogledu tega materiala je on znal razbrati iz obrazov, je znal razbrati in pokrajino in neke usode življenja. To je pa tisto, kar je pa, zato pa je pesnik, ne?
Ne, samo te manje tudi. To zgodbo o Ficku bi dopolnil, mislim, ker je na nek način opisuje ta način dela. Ne? Sem gledal posnetek, v katerem ta človek poje in to harmoniko razteguje in tako naprej. Ne? In vse to v bistvu izgleda zelo močno, zelo dostojanstveno, zelo tako, ko bi rekel, en človek, ki uživa res življenje in poje in tako naprej. Ampak potem sem našel v bistvu, začel sem iti sličico po sličico, ne, ker se mi je zdelo, da sem nekaj videl, kar se ponavadi izmuzne. Ne. In ta človek med tem, ko razteguje to harmoniko in poje, v enem delčku sekunde v bistvu tako dvigne glavo in naredi oziroma pojavi se mu na obrazu en grozen, grozljiv izraz bolečine. Res, to je, mislim, ko da ne more dihati, ne. In jaz sem bolj zamrznil to sličico in na to sličico sem potem pač napisal en tekst, ki ni v filmu, ne. Ampak to je bilo to, to je bila podlaga za ta lik, v bistvu, za tega človeka, ki sem ga gledal, ne. In potem pač Matjaž pride z informacijami, potem pride še tista zgodba, da je bil že slep in gluh, ko so mu odrezali obe nogi, da je dobil sladkorno bolezen in tako naprej, da je grozljivo umrl v bistvu. Ne? No, to je bilo v tej eni sličici, ki sem jo pač ujel. Ne? Zdaj lahko rečemo magija ali pa ne vem kaj, ampak to je to. Ne?
V pogovor z ustvarjalci filma se je vključil tudi Marko Brecelj, ki je zastavil zanimivo vprašanje.
Vojvodina diha skozi vse pore vašega dela. Obrazlagate to v slovenščini
Kaj bi odgovorili na vprašanje, ali je to vojvodinski film, ali je to slovenski film?
Če se mene vpraša, jaz bi rekel, da je to absolutno slovenski film. Tudi jaz ga na ta način dojemam. Jaz sem lahko na tem snemanju pač gledal to Vojvodino iz svoje pozicije, s pomočjo svoje kamere in s njo avtomatsko gledal kot Slovenec, ki pride tja. Takoj, ko sem pa začel delati ta film, sem pa vedel, da pa ob sebi rabim človeka, ki pa ima veze z Vojvodino in to je pa Nebojša, ki je pa rojen v Pančevu in, in pozna to pokrajino, pozna to zemljo, blato. Tako da z te strani prihaja pa ta Košava v naš film.
Ne, jaz lahko rečem v bistvu, da je meni to leglo zelo, zelo fino, zato ker tako kot vi imate radi Triglav, jaz imam rad to ravnico. Mislim, ker ni nobene uspetine in nič, ne, ker je človek v bistvu zelo lahko božansko sam in izpostavljen čemorkoli, kar pač lahko pade z neba ali pa ti od nekod pride in te zelo, zelo, kako bi rekel, egzistencialna pokrajina je to, ne. Po drugi strani pa jaz mislim, da meni to ni ne slovenska, pa tudi ne vojvodinska zgodba, v bistvu zgodba o ljudeh, ne. In pokrajina je v bistvu samo, kako bi rekel, ta nek dekor za zgodbo o ne vem, o tej poetiki ali pa tragiki človeškega življenja, o času, o gubah, o ne vem, nekih brazgotinah, ki jih čas pušča in tako naprej. Ne? To je to zgodba v bistvu o človeškem življenju. Ne?
S tem dodajmo, da Preclju ni šlo za tematiziranje razmejevanja, saj je k vprašanju dodal, da ga to vrstno početje nervira. Pri pričujočem vprašanju mu je torej bolj šlo za razmišljanje odprtosti obeh prostorov drug do drugega. Je pa to debato sklenil Matjaž Ivanišin.
Jaz bi, kar se tega tiče, še nekaj dodal. To, ko govorimo pač o ljudeh, v prvi vrsti moramo vedeti, da je to v bistvu, jaz ga še vedno dojemam, da je to film o enem mladem filmarju, o Karpu, ki je bil sposoben prenesti nam skozi te svoje materiale in ti zmeraj, ko snemaš, ne moreš se skriti za svojimi materiali. Material je na nek način zmeraj pametnejši od tebe, kar je krasno pri filmu. Ne? Da se ti se ne moreš skriti za filmom, ne moreš se udaljiti, ne moreš se distancirati od njega. Tako da na ta način jaz mislim, da je to preko Karpa seveda poskušamo govoriti o ljudeh, ampak še vedno pa poskušamo govoriti ali pa je nek poskus tudi moj nekega dialoga s Karpom, čeprav ga ne vodiva pred kamero, ne? Nimam ga kot sogovornika. Ne? Kar se te odprtosti tiče, to se mi pa zdi, da je zelo dobro izhodišče za to in na tak način smo tudi film delali. Ne zdaj samo toliko odprtost v prostoru, kulturnem, kakorkoli temu rečemo. Mislim, da je ta naš film na nek način zastavljen tudi kot eno odprto polje, ki šele ponuja možnosti za razmislek, za karkoli. Film ni delan na ta način, da bi nas poskušal fiksirati ali pa bil tezen v nekem smislu, da bi nam poskušal vcepljati nekaj v glavo, ampak nam poskuša dati eno podlago za pač nek razmislek, zdaj ali v katerokoli smer že ta gre. Ne? To se mi zdi, na ta način se mi zdi, da je ta odprtost najširša. No?
Najpričujoči prispevek zaključimo z zaključnim spremnim besedilom Nebojše Poptasiča naslovljenim Zvrnitev. V njegovi deželi ga je pričakala huda zima. Tiho veselje ga je prevzelo. Nebo, je rekel, in zemlja. Drevo, potem veter, ptice, reka, dan in potem noč in ceste, ljudje, besede in obrazi. Anička, Marjuca, Ficko, Lenke, Jaganja, Vinetu. Iz vsega tega si bom naredil hišo, je rekel. Hišo, ki bo stanovala v meni. Za K. G. Preostali del integralne verzije teksta za Karpopotnika najdete v reviji Kino številka 1920-2013, kjer vas čaka tudi celotna verzija intervjuja Maje Kranc s Matjažem Ivanišinom. Počasi se premikamo k drugemu delu današnje oddaje, ki bo znamenju krajših audio izjav Ingmar Bergman in Martina Scorsesea, ki bosta v njih spregovorila o Rosselliniju, čigar retrospektivo si lahko pravkar ogledate v kinoteki. Prisluhnimo sedaj Ingmar Bergman. Pri tem bodite, dragi poslušalci, pozorni tako na njen opis Rossellinija, pa tudi na njeno percepcijo nje same kot velike zvezde, ženske, ki jo javni ameriški diskurs popolnoma diskreditira. Naj še dodamo, da smo posnetek prozeli iz intervjuja z Mervejem Griffithom.
You're bored to death with the story of the Stromboli filming and Mr. Rossellini. And you're going to be asked about it everywhere you go. You realize that, but you write about it in your book. So we'll just touch on it and then get on to other wonderful aspects of your career. At the time that happened, you had seen a picture that had been directed by Roberto Rossellini.
Yes.
And you fell in love with his work. Yes. So much so that you went back and saw it a second time.
No, that I didn't do. But I waited for a second picture of his. Because, I mean, I was so moved and so taken by Open City. There was nothing like it in Hollywood in those days.
What quality of
the realistic quality, that it looked real. Everything was in the street. Everything was in a real house. And the actors, they had actors, but they didn't look like actors. You know, they had not combed their hair and they had no makeup and long eyelashes. They looked like real people. And then, of course, the story is really so moving about Rome and the open city during the war.
Did you feel at that point in your career, though, that whatever you had done in Hollywood, although it was wonderful, was a little too glossy and too actorish?
I had started to feel that. I had been 10 years, and though I was very lucky, I'm not knocking Hollywood, because I had a very good time. Good directors, good stories, good leading men. And it was just that in me is the quality I want to change. I wanted to do something different, and I thought another movie, well, similar to this one. And then I see this movie, and of course, immediately I wanted to go to Italy and do a movie like that.
So you then wrote a letter to Mr. Rossellini?
Yes, I waited for that second picture because I thought that maybe, you know, there are people that make one marvelous movie and then they disappear. So I thought I better wait until I find another. In the meantime, I tried to find out who Mr. Rossellini was and where he lived and could I find his address. I saw the movie Paisa, and then I knew. Now I'm going to write to him, because I thought he'd never look for me in Hollywood. So he got my letter, where I said I could speak several languages and could I come to Italy and make a picture. Was there any part that I could play? And it was a very strange story with that letter, because I got the address from a fan who stopped me in the street and asked for my name, and as I was writing, he said to me, I'm Italian, you know. And I said, have you heard about Roberto Rossellini? I said, sure, that's our great director. Where does he live? I said, Rome, send it to Minerva Film. So I sent it to Minerva Film, and Minerva Film burned down. Exactly when my letter arrived, it burned. But it was saved. It was a little burned in the edge, but the letter was there. And how strange it is in life that if my letter had been burned, I would never have gone to Italy. I would never have written a second letter. I would not have met this man, and I would not have my three children. It's strange how easily a letter could have disappeared, but it didn't. He got the letter, read it, didn't understand one word of it. He didn't even know who I was.
He didn't know who you were?
No, he didn't go to movies. He didn't like movies very much. He made movies, but he didn't like to go see other people's movies. No. He did documentation. He did documentaries.
But he must have looked at your films.
Yes, yes. It was explained to him that I had played Intermezzo, and they gave him the list of movies. And Intermezzo, he remembered that he had seen. And he'd seen it several times because it was during a bombing of Rome, and he ran to the shelter, and that was the cinema. And he went in there, and it was a very long bombardment, so he sat there.
And then, of course, the romance started on the island of Stromboli, and then we here, in turn, started seeing it on the front pages of all of our newspapers. I think at one point, even members of Congress were suggesting that you never return to this nation again. You were a scandalous woman because you fell in love with a man and was burying his child. I wonder, in retrospect, when you look at the world today and you look at the Hollywood community and the scandals that have invaded people's lives today and are dismissed, or either that or used to sell their motion pictures, that there is no scandal anymore. People can behave as outrageously as they feel like it, and it makes for wonderful writing, and the public all goes, well, whoopee, somebody else is at it again.
Yes.
When you look back...
It's hard to make a scandal today, isn't it? Yeah. We'll try.
Is there bitterness when you look at what happened to you in your life and your career? And
no, there's no bitterness. I don't have that in me.
Oh, good.
I don't have that. No, of course I was hurt. Who wouldn't be hurt to be called, an evil woman, and I was... corruption, and I was a danger for American womanhood.
Right, right.
Well, I thought it was just me, and I don't say that I did the right thing at all. I felt very guilty and very ashamed, but there I was, but at least I stood up for what I had done, and I was going to face the world, and I also, when everybody was against me, I even said I shall quit the screen forever, if that helps, because I was afraid I had ruined... Joan of Arc was still running, and I had ruined the picture Stromboli, and so I, I thought of finishing my career, but then I didn't do that. That didn't help.
Does it take its toll with the children? I mean, are they aware of...
Well, they laugh at it. They are the new generation. They think it's all nonsense.
Kaj pa je o Rossellinju imel zapovedati Martin Scorsese?
For me, the films, the work of Roberto Rossellini is a place and is something that I feel that I could continually go back and pull inspiration from to continue making films, and even for life, actually, to live, because the films made a very, very strong impression on me when I was at a very young age, and they represent to me an emotional, human truth, I should say, a truth in what it is to be a human being. And I find them moving to this day and refreshing through their simplicity and beauty.
Ostajamo še naprej pri Scorseseju. V naslednjem posnetku nam bo razkril še nekaj več o italijanskem neorealizmu, rojstvu modernega filma.
What do you do when you change how the world thinks of cinema? What's next? I mean, do you keep making the same kind of film? or if you're a person like Rossellini, which if you are, you try something experimental. You push further. It's not just experimental for experiment's sake, but you push the boundaries further. The impact was a negative one at first, but mainly because of the power of the neorealist movement at the end of World War II, the effect of Open City and Paisan, and of course De Sica's film, Bicycle Thieves, the spiritual rehabilitation of an entire culture and people through cinema. And the three pictures, they were looked at as complete rejections of what was so popular at the time, neorealism in Italy. And they looked like they wanted to be Hollywood melodramas for his new wife, Ingrid Bergman.
I don't care about your barley, or your vines, or your new terror. I want to leave this island and go away, far away. Like all the others who lived here and were born here and went away, far away.
I think there's such a radical shift in the three pictures because of, they don't look like the other films at all. There's a great intimacy about them. For example, in Journey to Italy, a wonderful sequence where George Sanders comes home late, comes back to the hotel late, and she pretends that she's asleep. And you watch all the details, who turns on a light, who opens a door, all of this going on so that they can avoid each other. And then finally, they finally have to acknowledge each other.
Alex? Yes? What is it?
I just wanted to make sure it was you.
Who did you think it was?
I was sound asleep. I had so much sun and air today that I was dead tired. I fell asleep almost immediately.
Everything is done with this very, very intimate, personal detail. They're almost like letters to each other in a way. And the conflicts are from a very, very personal, intimate, and lifelike area. And they're more experimental because of that.
I want to be with you. And you change, too. Relax, smile. I'll go right away if you want me to. I don't want to embarrass you in front of the other men.
Dragi poslušalke in poslušalci, s tem posnetkom Scorseseja pa smo počasi prišli do konca današnje oddaje. V naslednji oddaji bomo spregovorili o festivalih Kino Otok, ki bo potekal med 4. in 8. junijem, o festivalu migrantskega filma, ki se bo odvijal med 12. in 20. junijem. Našo pozornost pa bomo namenili tudi festivalu 35mm filma in še enemu čudovitemu slovenskemu filmu Zapelji me Marka Šantiča. Današnjo oddajo sem pripravila Nina Cvar, za tehnično realizacijo je poskrbel Valik.
Temna zvezda. Oddaja o filmu in skritih straneh filmskega vesolja. Vsak prvi in tretji ponedeljek v mesecu ob 8:30 zvečer.